Well, we started East Lake Church for everybody, but especially we wanted to make certain that men felt comfortable here. And so a lot of times men don't want to go to church. They, you'll see churches where there's lots of women, but not a lot of men. It's almost like they feel like if they follow or serve Jesus, he's going to turn them into a wussy. And really, that's not the case. Jesus is big enough to be God for women and men. You don't have to check your manhood at the door to follow Jesus. And so we make certain that it's a comfortable place for women, but also that it's a good place for dudes to go to church. Take your note cards. We're in a series called Boundaries, and starts today. And boundaries are very important because they define how I live, or even they define who I am. And in the physical world, it's easy to see boundaries. You see walls and fences, and you see signs, and that tells you where the boundaries are. But in the world of relationships, it gets a little blurry. It was a middle-aged couple that went to see a family counselor. And, oh, by the way, I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor, so welcome. Thank you for being here, and I'm so glad that you're here. Thanks for watching online. This is your church, too. Hope at some point you'll join us in the room here. So thanks for being here, because you can be a lot of places, but you're here. So anyway, it was this middle-aged couple. They go to see a family counselor, and they want to talk about their grandson, who's 25 years old and lives with them. And so they sit down with the counselor, and they say, you don't understand, our grandson has a lot of problems. I mean, he's 25 years old. He still lives at our house. He moved in when he was 18, right after high school, and wasn't sure what he wanted to do. So he decided, well, he'd like to go to university. So we got him enrolled in school, and he started going to college, and we decided he wasn't going to work. We'd pay for everything because, you know, if he worked, he'd be stressed out. He'd have a really heavy load that he had to carry. So we paid for all the tuition and all the books and covered all his meals and gave him spending money, even bought his clothes, and he kind of slacked off. I mean, he barely squeaked by university. And, you know, finally graduates, we're like, phew, you know, great. You know, now he's going to go out and get a job. Well, the first year, he hardly even looks for a job. And we're thinking, well, you know, I mean, it was hard to get through school, and you have to make that hard transition to working. And so, you know, a year goes by, no job. Another year goes by. He is 25 years old now, no job. We ask him, we said, you know, when are you going to get a job? And he said, well, I mailed out 2 resumes this week. He sits around and plays video games somehow with all these other people that are at their parents' houses not working either. And he doesn't pay any rent. He eats all of our food and like and we still give him money for clothes. And, you know, he's got a lot of problems. And the counselor doesn't say anything, you know, for a while. And then he looks at me and says, well, it doesn't sound like your grandson has any problems at all. And the granddad says, well, what are you talking about? I just gave you a list of all the things. He's got tons of problems. He says, no, he doesn't. I don't think your grandson has any problems at all. But there is someone in your family that has a problem, and that somebody is you. And now the grandmother pipes up. She says, well, what are you talking about? He goes to work every single day, and he earns money. He pays his bills. He's Mr. Responsible. He goes, oh, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the problem of boundaries. See, with your grandson, he doesn't have any problems. I mean, he didn't have to pay through school. He just got to go through school, and he got his education. And, I mean, that wasn't a problem. And now he stays home, and nobody's, like, on his back to get a job, and he has spending money to go out and, you know, get food. And he doesn't have any problems at all. But he should. See, he should have had a problem of trying to balance school and social life and a job. And he should be scrambling right now to learn how to pay his rent. It should be a real problem when he overspends and he has to eat like frozen pizza from Smith's. But he doesn't have any problems because you make sure that he doesn't. Because your problem is you don't have any boundaries. See, it can get pretty blurry. Think about if someone gave you a piece of property with a house on it. Here's a good idea of a boundary. Piece of property with a house on it. And they said, here's the only condition. You just have to manage and upkeep this property. But then they leave and they don't tell you where the boundaries are. And so you don't really know where your property stops and the other person's property begins, which could cause a real problem because you just have no idea what to be responsible for. And life can be like this. Like we're a piece of property. And if we don't know where our life ends and another person's begins, I mean, it can be dangerous. You can even lose the gift that was given to you. You don't have any idea. Well, where am I supposed to maintain my life? What am I supposed to be responsible for? It's the big idea this weekend. You can write it in your notes. We're created to take responsibility. And let me give this some credibility by reading something out of the Bible. Hey, by the way, if you don't have a Bible, you can just grab one on your way out free. We got tons of Bibles here. You can just grab one free and start to read it. And just like read a couple of paragraphs is great and get started on it. So we always bring the Bible into it because that's where we find credibility in life is the Bible. So here we go. Carry each other's burdens and it in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. Each one should test his own actions. Then he can take pride in himself without comparing himself to somebody else. For each one should carry his own load. So this idea of responsibility. Make a note somewhere. There's a huge difference between being responsible to someone and being responsible for someone. And that's a boundary issue. And this part of the Bible does a great job describing it because it talks about carrying things. And the first thing it talks about carrying is someone's burden. And we all have burdens, and it says it's okay to be responsible to someone's burdens. And originally what this word burden meant was a really excessive weight. It's something that's impossible to carry by yourselves. Think piano. Like you're going to move your house, and there's lots of things you could probably move yourself, but you're not going to move that piano by yourself. You're going to need help. And we all have pianos in our lives. You get divorced, and all of a sudden, life is too heavy to carry by yourself. It's a piano. You get downsized at work, and all of a sudden, you lose your job. You've been a really good worker. You've been there a long time, and all of a sudden, you can't pay your bills. That's a piano. Someone gets sick, and they're sick for a long time. That's a piano. Someone dies. That's a piano. Someone moves away, a long, long ways away, and now your friend is gone, and that's a piano. Burdens are things that are too heavy to carry by ourselves. You know, we created East Lake Church to be a place where you can come and admit you need help, first to God, and then to other people. But we created an environment where you don't have to be embarrassed or feel like a failure to say, I can't lift my piano by myself. It's too heavy. And when you see that, it's okay to be responsible to that, the Bible says, to realize, man, they can't carry that piano by themselves. And you can be responsible. That's you haven't violated any boundaries to help someone with that type of thing in their life. Where do you have a burden? You're not saying anything. And if you could see yourself, it's almost ridiculous to see you struggling along, dragging that piano, making about a half inch of headway every day. Because somewhere along the line, someone trained you, or you're in some social setting, you grew up in some situation where you were trained that it's that the worst thing ever is to admit you need help. Where do you have a burden in life? We created East Lake Church to be a place where people could come in and just be able to safely admit, man, I have a really heavy thing going on. Now this other idea, oh, and by the way, you'll notice in the room today there's no signs hanging from the ceiling telling people where to sit. So there isn't the divorced people over here and you know, the people over here is the ones that screwed up their finances and you know, way in the back, the ones that are, you know, struggling with porn outside, they have to sit. And so, you know, because we don't make distinctions here on our burdens, everybody gets to be together. One of the ways you create an atmosphere that's safe is you understand that the ground is level at the cross. Just like church. Now, here's the other side of it, though. So that's responsible, too. Let's talk about responsible for, because what it's saying here is that you carry your own load. Now, this word load means cargo, personalized cargo. Think the everyday weight of life. Think backpack now. So piano over here, responsible. Over here, backpack. The everyday weight of life. Now, here's the problem, is when somebody somebody tries to get other people to believe that the everyday weight of life is as heavy as a piano. I can't show up at work on time. That's too hard. I can't turn in all my homework. I can't stay up all night and write a paper. I can't look for a job every single day until I find one. And that's just that's the everyday weight of life that we all go through. This word load means weight that's appropriate for one person to carry. Do you have anybody in your life and you know they're trying to enroll you and get you to carry something that's not too heavy for them? And every time you suggest that they carry it, they whine, "Oh, that's heavy. You mean I got to balance my checkbook? It's a lot of work." You know, it's like, because when someone tries to, I'm going to use this word, when someone tries to con us, even if they don't know they are, but they try to con us and make us believe that a backpack is a piano, what is wrong with us when we get enrolled in that? There's a big difference. How do you tell the difference between a burden and a load? How do you tell the difference between a piano and a backpack? Wouldn't it be nice if in relationships it was that clear? Let me give you a sentence that will really help. Ask yourself this question. This will clear it up oftentimes. Could they carry that by themselves? Now think about it. If somebody walked up to a piano and you were wondering, somehow you got confused, you know, and you really asked yourself, could they really carry that piano by themselves? And then you looked at them in the backpack and you just were objective and said, could they really carry that by themselves? That's the way to get cleared up in relationships. You ask you a question, could they really show up to work on time? And then just answer the question. See, there's a huge difference between being responsible to something and being responsible for something. And we're not responsible for people's backpacks. Hey, listen. If the plumbing breaks in my neighbor's house, well, that sucks for him. And I don't like it. And I may be responsible to that to some degree, but at the end of the day, that's his plumbing, not mine. Hallelujah. But if it breaks in my house, boy, there's real problems when I become delusional, expense him to come over and you know, I invite the plumber over and I say, come fix my plumbing and everything. And he gets done and he says, I need my money. He says, oh, sit down on the couch. My neighbor will drop by in a couple of minutes and pay for it. You know, a week later, he's still sitting on my couch. That's a problem. Are you carrying anybody's backpack? Are you asking anybody to carry yours? Do you know that you can handicap someone if you carry their backpack? You can actually handicap them. I mean, you keep lifting their backpack and carrying their backpack, and pretty soon they become so weak with the everyday weight of life that's appropriate for them to carry. They become so weak, they can't even carry a pencil in their pocket because you're always carrying their backpack. And listen closely. Jesus will help you carry a piano or a backpack. And here's why. He is the only one that can help me with my backpack and not handicap me. He's the only one. You can always turn to Jesus and say, it's just too heavy for me, Lord, to turn my homework in. And he will walk you through that without handicapping you. But everybody else will leave you handicapped, and you'll be handicapped. See? Oh, and by the way, we're not talking about walls today. When you set a boundary, it's not a wall. See, a wall is completely different. In fact, a wall eliminates thinking and responsibility. When you have a wall, you don't have to think at all. A wall just keeps everything out, but unfortunately, it keeps everything in. Do you know sometimes the very thing that I'm trying to keep out of my life, I have to live in my life because I can't get it out? That's a wall. See, when I construct a wall in my life because I don't want to be afraid, so I don't let anything that scares me into my life, the fear can't get out of my life. Walls are really dangerous because I end up living in the very thing that I'm trying to keep out. And we're not talking about walls today. It's more like a check station at a border. Like a check, you know, like you can cross the border. Now, when you cross the border, you have to have proper identification to get in, and you have to have proper identification to get out. And it means you're thinking. A boundary is about thinking. Taking responsibility is about thought. Where in your life is things just... Let me say it this way. What's staying out of your life and you're not even thinking about it, and what's in your life and you try not to think about it? But when you have a checkpoint, we have to have exits where we sign off and say, get that out. It's a checkpoint. We're thinking. And because we're thinking, here's what it looks like. Look in your notes. Here's some things that happens when you're thinking. Choices instead of compliance. Choices instead of compliance. And listen to this here. Each man should give what he has decided to give in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And there's a huge difference between choices and compliance. Boundaries promote choices. And compliance, here's what compliance is. Compliance is when I do something automatically. It's when a circumstance makes me do something automatically. When I automatically respond a certain way, that's compliance. It's living life like a vending machine. The circumstances push a certain button, and I get a certain response every time. F-15 and down drops the Fritos. Every time. There's no thinking involved in compliance. Compliance means auto. All I do is I go through life and circumstances come up and it pushes a button and I respond the same way every single time. And boundaries make us think and give us a choice so we don't have to comply. Compliance looks like this. It's like, well, I have to do this because I want to be accepted and I want to be admired. Or I can't do this. I'm not going to do this because I don't want to be rejected. Where do you live life like a vending machine? Same results every single time. And by the way, you know, compliance can trick you because you think compliance is about other people. Well, they made me do it. And well, here's the truth of it. It might start there, but compliance is actually something that lives inside of me. It's my buttons that get pushed. And I act the same way every time. Now you might be thinking, oh, great, I came to church today and I get to find out I'm the problem. Well, hang on. Because I have discovered in life when I determine that the problem is inside of me, I'm most hopeful. Hey, guess what? Check it out. If your issues are the reason I have a terrible life, there's not a lot I can do about that. But if it's my issues, I can make some changes. And my circumstances can change. See? It's a choice. I have the authority when I find out that the problem is inside me to do something about it. And you do know you have a lot of authority over your life, don't you? You might think somebody else is making you comply, but they don't have authority over your life. You do. Solely, specifically, you have authority. Years ago, I went to Russia, and I went there to do some teaching and some training. So and this team went along. It's way in the east of Russia, like down in this, you know, way back in the east of Russia. And we were way down there, and we're there for 2 weeks. And this woman that's on the team, they told her not to do it, but you know, one of those girls that does what she wants to do. So anyway, she's out and about, and she had her visa. She has her visa, and she has it in her purse because she's shopping. Did I say she's a woman? And so she's shopping, and someone stole her visa out of her purse in Russia, Eastern Russia. This was a long time ago too. And so, like way before they were pretending to be all nicey nice. And so this was back in the day. And we're in Russia, and now she has no visa. And they told her, they said, you're not going to leave Russia. They're never going to let you leave without a visa. And we're thinking, oh, man, come on. They're not going to let her leave. So we get to the airport on the day we're leaving, and she goes up, you know, we're all in line, we got our luggage there, and oh, by the way, in Russia, in Eastern Russia, don't think airports like this. The airports look like run-down Greyhound stations. I mean, they're just dilapidated, and there's a little additive to it. There's men walking around with machine guns. So that's the airport, right? So we're in the airport, and she's going through the line, and I'm behind her, and she goes up to the window where there's not like a, you know, woman teller or something like that. There's like a soldier in there, right? And so she, you know, puts her passport in. He says, visa. And she says, well, I didn't have my visa. It got stolen. He says, no visa. No, no visa. He goes, step out of line, please. No travel today. And she said, oh, I, what do you mean? I'm a U.S. citizen. He goes, you'll have to stay in Russia. I was like, oh, man, this is not on my watch, man. So I'm the leader of the team, so I said, stand over here. So I said to the guy, I said, listen, she got her visa stolen. We're Americans. We're leaving today. We've been here for a couple weeks. That's our plane out there, and we're going to be leaving today. So could you check her through? He said, does she have visa? I said, no, she doesn't have the visa, but we're leaving today. He said, she'll have to stay in Russia. No travel. So now I've been in Russia 2 weeks, and I'm just not in the mood for it. So I don't know if you ever do this, but you just sort of like get your man thing on, and you're like steely-eyed. And so I told him, I said, listen, dude, you listen to me. I am the leader of this team, and she is leaving today. Today she's getting on that plane with me. We are leaving Russia. Does she have a visa? No, I told you that once. She would not leave Russia. So now I'm saying, you don't seem to understand who you're talking to. I'm telling you right now that I'm the leader of this team. She's getting on that plane with me today. She's going back to the United States. We are done here in Russia. You put her through this line right now. I'm not playing with you, man. Now, I'm telling you, she's leaving today. That woman is leaving with me today. Do you understand? Does she have a visa? And then the guy with the machine gun was sort of like lifting it. He's over, you know. And I learned something that day. It didn't matter about my attitude. It mattered about who had the authority. Do you know she did not leave Russia? And neither did I. I had to stay back with her for days and days sorting that thing out by ourselves. So we finally got to go home. And we got to go home when the person in authority saw our visa and said, now you travel. I did everything I could do to not give him a piece of signature right to him. Because you're like, you know, now we travel. But I'm just telling you, it matters who has the authority, and you do. You have the authority in your life to set the boundaries. Nobody else does. You may think they're making you comply, and you're wrong. You have the authority in your life to set the boundaries where you want to set them. And don't blame anybody else for it, and don't think anybody else is going to set them for you. You have the authority. You have the authority to set your boundaries wherever they go. You're the one. You have the authority to set your boundaries. It's your choice. It's your responsibility. Now, number two, turn it over. Let's take a look at this. Results instead of blame. And then this section of scripture, very hopeful. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. So this week I came home, and there was these fresh vegetables on the table in the kitchen. Someone stops by my house, and some friends of mine, who had been in their garden the week before, and they had tomatoes and some squash, and I was like, wow, fresh vegetables, this is awesome. And when I went to their garden, here's what happened in their garden. I was looking all around their garden, and I went over to look at the tomatoes, and sure enough, on the tomato plants, there's tomatoes. There were no artichokes on it. And I go over to look at the plants that's supposed to have squash. No pineapples on those plants. And then there was these other plants. I have no idea what they were. Some kind of spices that you were supposed to have. But they every one of those plants had exactly what was supposed to be on it. Because God will not be mocked. Whatever you put in the ground is what will grow. And so I had tomatoes. They brought tomatoes over to my house. So I brought like something as an illustration because I love tomatoes. So let me show you a couple things here. So for instance, when I went over to see the tomatoes, here's what you had. You had a nice tomato right here. I like tomatoes. I don't know if you like tomatoes. I like tomatoes. And so, you know, it'd be weird to go over and get an artichoke off a tomato plant because God won't be mocked. Whatever you sow, whatever seed you put in the ground. Is there anybody putting seed into your life and you don't like what's growing? Let me give you an example. This is a nasty beet. And I absolutely hate beets. These are like so terrible. And I know people come up to me and say, oh, you just haven't had them prepared correctly. And it's like, shut up, they're nasty. It's like, never, these are terrible. But beets, can you imagine how disappointing it would be to plant these in your garden and think, woo, it's going to be tomato time. You came out and this was growing? And yet you let people sow seed into your life and this is what comes up. And then you bitch and moan. And you're like, oh, I have the beets and it's not fair. It's like, well, yeah. Or, you know, some people even get mad at God. God, why do I have the beets all the time? He's like, why are you complaining to me? Why are you mocking me? You planted beets. You let them plant beets. And now you're blaming me for beets? See, God will not be mocked. You can mock him. It doesn't say that people won't mock him. He's saying that he won't get enrolled in your mocking. Oh my gosh, I'm off my game today. Holy cow, you planted tomatoes and I let beets come up. Bad God. He won't be enrolled. He'll say, well, wait a minute. You planted those beets with your own hands. And now you're mad because you're eating them. See? So I did want to ask the question, does anybody in your family stop by every once in a while and uproot your nice tomatoes and put these crappy things in? Beets? Because here's why. If you don't want to eat these, you have the authority to make certain that you don't. I hate beets, and I haven't eaten them since I was a little kid. Because I have the authority to make sure I don't have to. It's one of the best things of being an adult. You can drink as much chocolate milk as you want, and you never have to eat beets. So I just wanted to ask the question. Is there anything going on in your life, and you're blaming other people, and you sat there and you watched them put the seeds in? God will not be mocked. Now, by the way, let me say something to you, just to make sure you know. Let me say something to you. The question becomes, well, how does it happen? How do I get deceived? How do I end up with this when I don't want this? How do I get deceived into it? Let me tell you a couple of ways it happens. The guilt trip. People put a guilt trip on you about beets. Here's what it sounds like. You go to your boss and you're trying to get a couple of days off to spend some time with the kids. All right, you can take some time off, but geez, I haven't had any time off in like 6 months, but it's okay if you do. Or are you going to change the big plans? You always spend it with your parents. Always spend it with your parents. Big holidays with your parents. You decide you're going to go be with some friends. And so you say to your dad and mom, well, this year we're going to go up to a cabin with our friends and have Thanksgiving. And you know, and your dad says, all right, that's okay. I guess you and your mom and I will just stay home and have TV dinners. Or you go to somebody that owes you $20 and hasn't paid you, and you said, hey man, you know, the payday came, could I get that $20 I loaned you? What are you gonna be on my back for about that $20, man? You make 10 times more money than I do. And then you feel guilty and you feel wrong for having the authority in your life to set a boundary. So that's how it happens. We get deceived into thinking, well, I guess I have to eat these, even though I planted these. Here's another way. I don't want to be rejected. And so, you know, you can feel the rejection coming on. And this happens to a lot of teenagers, especially young teenage girls. This happens to is and we all did it, and it's just part of going through life. It's very difficult. But the dude says, well, come on, man, if you're not gonna let me, then you must not love me. And then the girl starts feeling like, oh, man, he's going to reject me, and people at school are going to know he dumped me, and it's going to be so hard. So you even, this is how crazy it gets, and this I'm in this category too. We allow people to even cross our physical boundaries. We end up with this, even physically, because we don't want to be rejected. And then we cry ourselves to sleep that night and the next night, and we try to hide it, and we take 16,000 hot showers, and the truth is, it all started because we didn't want to be rejected. And by the way, if you have young men, teach them early. Say, don't do that to girls, man. Don't do, because I wish it wasn't true, but all of us dudes are sort of programmed to be idiots when it comes to that. it's not a good thing, but it's how we roll. So you might as well get used to us. And if you're raising boys, you have to reprogram them. You have to help them see and say to them, say, listen, you know, there's boundaries that you have as a man. And here's what's crazy. Let's get rid of this nasty. Here's what's crazy is that you can, see, it's about results. You can want certain results in your life and not sow the seed to get it. You can be a young man and say, well, I want to like be a godly husband and have this really cool Christian wife, and that's the kind of thing I want to have happen in my life. And then you're not doing anything about it. You're not reading any books about women. You're not reading the Bible about how to be a godly husband. You're not going to the strip joint at lunchtime with your friends. You're not saving any money for your marriage. You're not spending any time with women in group settings to find out what type of person are these people? You know, you're not doing anything at all whatsoever, and yet you're thinking in your mind, and then you start complaining to God, you start mocking, how come I don't have the great Christian woman yet, and the girlfriend, I'm going to have the great godly family? And God's like, are you kidding me? You're not putting any seed in the ground to get that. What type of seed are you sowing? I want my finances to be really cool and in order. I want everything to be good. And so I'm reading books on money, and I'm like watching videos, and I'm talking to a financial planner, and I'm trying to save money aside, and I'm not using my credit cards like a madman, and I'm really working super, super hard. Okay. But then there's the person that's not doing anything. It's like, how come I don't have any money, God? You keep putting this in the ground. Now, this is not a condemning talk. It's a hopeful talk, because here's the good news. We get to choose. Do you know that the beautiful thing about the principle is that you get to decide what you eat? You can sow your way to what you want to experience. The fill-in that you saw there, results instead of blame. You can sow your way to the results that you want. That's the hopeful thing. If you don't want beets, don't put them in the ground. What is it that you want to see occur in your life? Are you sowing that seed? And here's the good news. It's not something you have to do by yourself. In fact, look at the last thing here, the good news this weekend. Jesus will respond to your invitation. Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him, and he with me. And so here's the way we'll wrap up today, is I don't want anyone at Eastlake to ever go home and really try to do what you heard in the talk. I'm going to go home. I'm going to set all those boundaries. I'm going to make sure I'm putting the right type of seed in. Man, I'm going to, you know, don't even try, because that's not the gospel. The gospel is starting with, it's impossible to do God stuff without God. Here's the gospel. I admit I can't do any of the stuff that Jesus wants me to without Jesus. This is not a self-help program. This is turning you towards the Lord to say, gosh, I want that type of life. I'm so sick of beets. Jesus. And here's the good news. He's knocking. He's knocking on the silo where the beets are kept. He's knocking. Saying, can I get in there and do something about what you don't want to eat? And a lot of times we don't open the door because we feel like he's going to come in and he's going to start ridiculing us. Because somebody in our life has trained us to think that, boy, if you ever open your heart and admit you're wrong, man, now they really kick you when you're down. Or he's going to shame you. But do you notice what he does when he comes in here? Look at that again. Look at this part right here. I will come in and eat with him. Now catch this. The first thing Jesus does when you open the door is has a meal with you. What if it's not ridicule? What if it's not correction? What if inviting God into an area of your life doesn't look anything like that? What if it looks like hanging out and having a nice meal together and talking and sharing and getting to know each other? The first thing Jesus says is, let's eat together, my treat. That's what happens when you invite him in. Where do you need to invite Jesus into an area of your life because it's filled with beets? And by the way, don't go home today and list all the things that you don't like to do. I don't like the diet, and I don't like to not spend money like I want, and I want to eat whatever I want. And, well, those are the beets in my life, so I'm never doing them again. You missed the point. Here's the point. And this is hard for me to say, but there's really no difference between beets and tomatoes. But don't be deceived. If you want beets, that's fine, but don't be deceived. Don't plant tomatoes and be mad when you get a beet. That's the point. Put into the ground what you want to experience. Invite Jesus into the area where you need to sow the seed.